KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
A vigil is taking place in Beaverton right now, targeting Senator Ron Wyden. The participants are asking for Wyden's support for the deal with Iran. Senator Wyden is still on the fence about whether to support the deal. There are over 200 such vigils taking place nationwide today, Wednesday, August 26th. Today in Portland, a vigil took place at noon at Senator Ron Wyden's office at 911 Northeast 11th Street. And in Beaverton, a vigil began at 5 p.m. at Southwest 5th and Hall across from the Beaverton Library. Both vigils call on Ron Wyden to support the deal with Iran. Lisa Stiller is one of the organizers, and she joins us now live from the vigil. Lisa, what's the scene right now in front of the Beaverton Library?
We've got about 50 to 60 people. They have a table where people are signing petitions. They're lining each side of the street. We're getting a lot of positive response from people passing by. It's very laid back, but it's wonderful how many people showed up.
And what are you hoping to accomplish with this vigil?
Well, one of the things that we did was we collected, I think there are about 3,000 signatures on Wyden's petition. A lot of signatures asking Wyden, and we're going to be also asking Bamanichi to support the deal with Iran, because they're both sitting on the fence right now, and we feel that it's extremely important to be proactive here and prevent war before we even start thinking about it. And this deal, no, it's not perfect, but it puts in place a lot of things that will prevent either U.S. or Israel or any country going to war with Iran, and will help, you know, encourage Iran to do the right thing, and hopefully economically, they'll prosper and the sanctions will be lifted and we will not have a threat from them.
Have you had any response from Senator Wyden yet?
Not yet. I know that a group went in this morning to present petitions. A group is hoping to go to Bonamici's office on Friday to present petitions, but we haven't heard from either of them. And we're going to keep going. I mean, we're not going to stop. We're going to keep organizing groups of people to go in and see them.
What about the public? What kind of response have you gotten from them?
People are passing by, have been very supportive. I mean, a little 10-year-old passed by and said, great signs. So we're having a lot of really, really good response. So I think the public's behind this. And I think what we're fighting in Congress, my personal opinion is we're just fighting a lot of big money.
Zooming out a little bit, the right wing has been pushing the idea that this nuclear deal will allow Iran to go ahead with its nuclear program. Do you think there's anything to that claim?
I don't think so. I know it's not the perfect deal, but it puts in place enough things so that Iran will have a really hard time developing anything. I mean, there's things in place where inspectors can go in and search. You know, there's just enough things in place to make this extremely difficult. And, you know, if Iran's going to go ahead and do it, this will be the most difficult circumstances for them to do it in. If we don't do this, yes, they're going to go ahead and do it. If we do this, there's a much, much, much smaller chance that's going to happen.
Now, a letter was submitted today by 200 former military and security personnel to Congress, urging them to vote against the deal. Can you comment on that?
This is the first I've heard of it, but that's really interesting. I just think it's fear. I think there's just a lot of fear out there. Again, my fear is, or my personal opinion is, if we don't do it, what do we get? I think this is the best we're going to get. If we don't do it, what's going to happen? I think that's what we have to ask ourselves. That is very concerning, and I'm sure that's not helping those Congress people who are on the fence make a decision, but we're going to keep at it because we feel this is better than nothing. I mean, no matter what you think, this is much better than nothing, and we're not going to get anything better. I think they got the best they could get, and how are we going to look to the world if we don't sign this? All the other countries are behind it. I mean, we're going to totally lose face.
After today's vigil, are there other actions taking place locally that people might get involved in?
There's one, I understand, there's one at 7 o'clock down in the Pearl. You can go onto the Move On site and find it, but I understand it's the one at 7 o'clock in the Pearl. I don't think these actions are going to end. As I said, we really encourage individual people and groups to make appointments with all their congressional representatives, people who are on the fence, and go visit them nonstop. Because, yes, we do have a lot of big power, especially money, who is behind not putting this bill forward. And I just think it's too dangerous for us not to do it.
And what's the importance of Ron Wyden and other Senate Democrats in this issue?
Because if this doesn't go through, we need to have a certain amount of votes to get this through. And if we don't have those votes, it's not going to happen. As I understand it, and I don't know if I have this right, if it doesn't go through, I think Obama's, he's going to I guess there's a certain amount of votes to override a veto, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. If there's a certain votes needed to override a veto, they need to have that. And the Democrats and those Republicans are very important. But the Democrats are after this. They're the ones we think we can get on our side. So I think they're the ones that we're really pushing, because those are the ones we think are most on the fence. But we need every single vote we can get.
Thank you for joining us, Lisa. We've been speaking with Lisa Stiller, who's one of the organizers of a vigil going on right now outside of the Beaverton Library, calling on local voters to call Ron Wyden and urge him to vote in favor of the deal with Iran.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in The Union Edge. Folks, it's with great pleasure I get to reintroduce Craig Harrington of Media Matters. Craig, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Craig, it's always a pleasure, man, and I appreciate you what you guys do at Media Matters. I think you guys deserve combat pay, but that's another story. I kind of delight in doing this, and I hope that somewhere along the lines we've got somebody who's listening to this program that has watched Fox News. I specifically remember when the fight for 15 was in Seattle, and the local community around the airport, SeaTac, said, hey, you know, we're going to start paying $15 an hour. It's a good thing for the community. There was lots of pushback.
Yeah.
Fox News, I think, said it was the apocalypse, it was bad for business, and everybody in Seattle was going to lose their job because of this Obama/Bigfoot conspiracy or something. I don't know. But the numbers are back. Restaurants are opening up new restaurants because of the increase in business that they've got. And there's some other really neat things going on there. What's going?
So back in July, the American Enterprise Institute, and at this point I honestly feel like I should change my title to Media Matters Senior Seattle Minimum Wage Correspondent.
I'm all for it, man.
Because the American Enterprise Institute noticed a very, very tiny drop in restaurant food service employment in not just Seattle, but in Seattle, Tacoma, and Bellevue, the combined metropolitan statistical area, of which the city of Seattle is less than one-fifth of the total population. But they noticed that after, in April of 2015, the minimum wage in the city went up to $11, there was a tiny drop in restaurant employment in the city from April to May. And they said, look, the minimum wage killed 1,000 jobs in Seattle. What then happened is July data became available from the Bureau of Labor Statistics showing that the minimum wage hasn't killed 1,000 jobs in Seattle. In fact, since the minimum wage has gone into effect, the metropolitan statistical area, of which Seattle is a component, has seen 2,000 new jobs, 1,800 jobs since January, and more than 2,000 jobs since the minimum wage was increased on April 1st. So this is something that Fox News has run with numerous times. They've claimed that Seattle's minimum wage is killing jobs in the Seattle area. It's something that a very sloppy scholar at the American Enterprise Institute named Mark Perry ran with in July. And now we have better data, and it's just certifiably not true. You cannot claim that there was any drop in local restaurant employment in Seattle because of the minimum wage or after the minimum wage or as a result of the minimum wage, because now that we have more months of data, we've seen that there was a tiny drop, less than 1%, and then there was a large a large correction and an increase in the population that were employed in food service, but still less than 1%. We're talking about very small numbers of people, almost statistically insignificant numbers of people. But if you're using these statistically insignificant data to make your point, you have to continue to use them. And Fox was citing these data a month ago, saying the minimum wage is killing jobs in Seattle. Now, nothing, crickets, when we see that actually that's not the case, which every economist said was not going to be the case. The minimum wage has a negligible impact on employment. It does not create unemployment, and it has a very negligible effect on total employment gains as well. What we see is that it generally has a net zero impact. It doesn't create jobs. It doesn't kill jobs. It just puts money in workers' pockets, which drives economic activity and may create jobs in the long run. But in the short run, it's an effective way of boosting pay and boosting economic activity among the people who are low-wage earners.
Craig, this reminds me of the fact that, you know, some of our friends on the networks have said, well, you know, we have we've measured the joblessness rate here in the United States by these tools, but we're no longer going to do that because these tools don't provide us with the information we want. So we have a new zombie-approved job measurements tool that that shows clearly that President Obama has killed jobs and turned people into zombies.
Yeah, I mean, this is something you hear all the time. You hear people say the word real unemployment rate, and it's actually something that even Bernie Sanders uses. And they talk about the U6 number, which, you know, there's the U3, which is the official unemployment rate, and then there's U6, which is an expanded version of the unemployment rate and includes a larger population. And obviously, if you include a larger population of people who are attached to the workforce, you'll see an increase in the rate at which those people are not working. But what we see is positive trends on unemployment. Over and over again for nearly 6 years, the unemployment rate has slowly and steadily declined. The expanded unemployment rate and the official rate have declined and declined, and now they're near pre-recession levels. So right-wing media can't use those numbers anymore. Donald Trump can't use those numbers anymore. So now what they're increasingly doing is just making stuff up, which is why Donald Trump and Rush Limbaugh say that the unemployment rate is 40% or 42% or 42.9% or however obscure and illogical they want to get with it. But the fact is unemployment's coming down, and we increased wages in the minimum wage in 2009 as part of a statute that was signed years before. And they haven't budged since. When we see local and state initiatives to raise the minimum wage, what we don't see is an increase in unemployment in those areas because it just doesn't affect the employment market. All it does is put money in people's pockets. It reduces economic inequality. It increases economic activity, but it doesn't kill jobs.
You know, this is incredible to me. And I got to say this. Okay, Osama bin Laden's dead. GM's alive. The stock market is at near all-time highs, never been that high before. The death correction that they were talking about turned out to be 3.5%. And gas prices by fall are going to be about $2 a gallon. And when Iran puts its oil into the system, it's probably going to be about $1.50.
And of course, remember Obama and running up the debt was supposed to drive this runaway inflation that was going to destroy the economy and make us like Weimar Germany or like Zimbabwe, and that hasn't happened. Inflation rates just keep dropping. They're actually so low that the Fed is concerned about how low inflation rates are.
They're going to have to pay you to put money in the bank.
Right. Basically, banks are doing that. You know, you see savings accounts returns are near zero at most big banks because there's no value in them drawing in savings because, you know, there's plenty of liquid assets out there. There's plenty of cash out there.
And yet, Congress refuses to put money into the infrastructure to repair it to create even more jobs.
Right. And a lot of this, you know, these attacks on Seattle's minimum wage, we know they're baseless, and now we can use the data that Fox and the American Enterprise Institute were using to destroy their own claims. But it doesn't matter when you're dealing with people who are ideological and partisan, the way Fox News is, the way the conservative media is, the facts are never going to get to them. The fact that economists are saying that we need to invest in infrastructure, that we need to raise the minimum wage, that we need to expand the federal deficit and the federal debt holdings in the short term so we can make the vital investments in our communities that we need to have a 21st century economy, the fact that all of the proof is on their side, it just doesn't matter because the ideologues and the conservative media and the politicians that they empower just aren't using facts. These are still people who deny climate change. If Barack Obama came out tomorrow and said the sky was blue, they would have some argument against it. And it just doesn't matter what the proof is. It doesn't matter what the math says. All that matters is that they have their conservative playbook and they're going to play by it.
Greg, it keeps our life interesting, yes?
Yes.
It does. And folks, again, you know, check it out for yourself. Do your own homework. This is a wonderful thing. Greg, how do we find out more about you and what you do for Media Matters?
Well, of course, you can check out Media Matters for America online at mediamatters.org, where we staff and update virtually 24/7 to correct conservative and mainstream media misinformation alike. The minimum wage is a particular area of interest of mine, but if you're interested in other areas that we cover or any of our other researchers, you can follow most of us on Twitter as well.
Absolutely. And if you include us at The Union Edge, Craig will retweet it for you. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks. Craig Harrington of Media Matters. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You are listening to KBOO Portland Community Radio. The time is 6 o'clock. Coming up is The Underground, a production of the KBOO Youth Collective, after these short messages. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Peña Flamenca de Portland.